Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 10 of the PreparedX podcast. In this one, I interview Leo Taddeo, who is the Chief Security Officer over at Cryptzone. Leo is the former special agent in charge of the Special Operations and Cyber Division of the FBI's New York office. Really interesting gentleman. I spoke to him about the extent of cybersecurity and asked him about some of the current threats that organizations face. So he spoke about some of those. We also discussed threat actors and some of the known threat actors at this current time. We also got into the crisis management side of cyber breaches. And he also talks about some of his own experiences with some of the challenges that organizations have faced in the middle of a cyber breach. Certainly looking at the reputation side and, the side of the breach that we don't often hear about, which is, the management of the attack as well as the recovery piece. So he goes into a fair bit in this one. Leo is also the keynote speaker at our conference, the Crisis Management Conference, which is in Boston on March 31st of 2016, and we're really looking forward to his presentation. He actually, right at the end of the podcast, touched on some of the points that he will cover in that presentation, so I think you'll find that very interesting as well. Anyway, here's the interview.
Well, good morning, Leo, and I know it's evening time where you are in Dubai today, so I appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate the opportunity. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, and just for the audience, Leo, if you can just give them a little background on yourself and a little bit about your career, and then we'll get into the interview.
Right. So I recently, as you know, retired from the FBI after 20 plus years of service. But I started my career in the military as a Marine officer, as a tank officer. After leaving the Marines, I looked for opportunities and decided to go to law school. Finished and practiced law for a while, but it really wasn't for me. And the FBI was always very, very interesting for me. And I decided to give it a try. And 20 years later, I was still challenged and still happy in the role, and met some extraordinary people and had some extraordinary experiences there, professional and personal, and was very, very much rewarded with a career in public service at the FBI. But it came time to think about what I wanted to do after government service, and I looked around and looked for opportunities in the private sector. And one that was especially appealing is the one I have now, and that's with a small technology group that is helping companies keep their networks safe. And I think not only is the technology that we are developing compelling, but our strategy is sound. And I think it's really what the commercial and government sectors need in order to flip the equation on the adversary. We'll talk some more about what the adversary is doing, but I think the essential point is it's very low risk and high profit to attack networks today, and network defenders need to change that equation. They need to make it high risk and high expense to attack our networks, and I think there are some technologies that allow us to do that. So we'll talk some more about what the adversary is doing and what network defenders can do to keep safe.
Sure. Yeah, that was certainly one of my questions. You mentioned the term adversaries there, and we also hear the term threat actors. Making the assumption that's the same group, and there are a number of other terms used for them. For our audience who may not be as familiar with that term, can you just talk a little bit about what a threat actor is, and really some of the more well-known threat actors?
Right. So we like to back when I was still an FBI agent, the way we looked at the threat was by creating a spectrum according to skill set and motivation. So if you look at a low end of the spectrum, meaning low skill and low resources, you have the hacker groups that are really hobby hackers. These are individuals who may be alone or in small groups, but they don't have the kind of financial or technical resources to do the sophisticated attacks that we see in the higher end of the spectrum. But on the low end of the spectrum, to give an assessment, it's still problematic because the tools available are easy to use and highly effective, and they are easy to obtain. So we see a troubling trend in the low end of the spectrum, not because of our inability to defend. I think we are getting better at defending some of the simpler attacks, but at the same time, the low end of the spectrum is getting better tools, and those tools are easier to deploy. So if you move into the middle end of the spectrum, you have sophisticated criminal groups that are better resourced, and they are financially motivated. And
sure.
That is another troubling, that's another troubling portion of the spectrum, because they are taking profits and reinvesting those profits into their criminal organization. They are developing technical talent, they are developing technical tools, and they are creating hierarchies. And as you know, an organization is far more dangerous than the sum of its parts, and these groups are highly efficient, highly specialized, and are making doing great damage to our companies by stealing data and monetizing it. If you move up the scale, we're talking about the nation-state threat, where you have highly skilled and highly resourced threat actors. We hear about China and Russia a lot, but it's almost infinite in the patience and the tools that they use are very, very effective, and they have long-term goals with strategic objectives in mind, and they are extraordinarily difficult to defend against once they are determined to target a particular network. So that's a description of the spectrum and the breakdown of motivations.
Sure.
But they can also come in different forms, especially the insider threat. So
right.
It's important not to forget that while we are focused externally in most cases, some of our most serious threats are from our own employees and some of the folks that have access to our network resources. And in many cases, they are the people who can do the most damage. So it's important to keep an eye on that threat as well. And there are some special challenges for the insider threat because they are already credentialed and they already have access to resources. And preventing damage from the insider is especially hard because much of their activity is masked behind legitimate use.
Right.
So we can talk more about that challenge. But while many of us focus on the external, I think we've got to pay particular attention to the internal threat as well.
Sure. We certainly see that on our side of the business that we do on the, you know, the exercise side of, you know, whether it be a cyber event or some other risk to the business. You know, it's typically one of the, you know, the top three things that keeps, you know, a chief security officer or a company security mm-hmm. officer awake at night. And that is that insider, mm-hmm. because as you say, they're officially inside the network and they can certainly mm-hmm. navigate themselves around easily. So appreciate that insight. With regards to some of your work with the FBI and responding to some cyber breaches over the years, is there one particular case or a number of cases that gave you the kind of the biggest insight into the magnitude of the cybersecurity issue? Was there one standout, or is there a number of them which made you say, you know, wow, you know, this cybersecurity threat is just, you know, much bigger than we ever imagined?
Well, yeah, there were a number of cases that we were surprised by the technical capabilities of the adversary. But what really is surprising was that no matter how many agents we put into the problem, there was never an end in sight to the number of intrusions we could be investigating. So there was no horizon. We couldn't see the end of it. And
right.
What was surprising is that it didn't seem to have a bottom. The more resources we put into the program, the more we uncovered and the more work we created. So that was different than, you know, some other programs where if you put enough people on the problem, you can get it down to a risk level that is acceptable. Cyber, we are losing ground. I think there's the damage and all the data points that we can measure showing the impact of the cyber problem keep getting farther and farther out of reach, despite the fact that there are so many resources going into countering this threat.
Yeah, and we hear about the different types of threats that come up almost on a daily basis. Some more prominent than others, and others that make kind of the headlines over some of the lesser known ones. But you know, just for the audience, could you just touch on a couple, two or three of the more recent cybersecurity threats that organizations as well as governments are being impacted by at the moment?
All right. Well, I think it's important for network defenders to understand that they have data similar to the target type of data. They have data that's similar to the OPM breach that we saw last year. And as a result, they are vulnerable. We all have the same data. We all have the same basic infrastructure, and we all have the same defensive tools. There's not much difference between antivirus from one vendor or antivirus from another, or sure, a firewall from one vendor or another. And the idea that it can't happen here because we have all of our protections in place is often in the rearview mirror a false sense of security. Many of the companies that have been breached had very smart people working really hard to defend against the type of breach that we have seen, and yet they were surprised that there were vulnerabilities that they didn't see, but the adversary discovered and exploited. And so I think it's important for network defenders to have a healthy sense of paranoia. I know it can create fatigue in an organization,
right,
but security is not something you can achieve. It's something that you work towards, and we have to evolve with the threat. I think the main thing that we saw in companies that were breached is that they were slow to evolve to address the threat. And that's probably the only real common thread you can identify, is that especially in a complex organization where you have so many moving parts and such a broad surface area to defend, it's hard to evolve and to deploy effective tools everywhere. But it's important to keep thinking about it and to keep advocating for it and to keep working at it.
Sure. And the network defenders, the IT side of the business, the incident responders, those that are heavily involved in the depths of a network, outside of that, let's talk a little bit about, if you could, the crisis management side. So we've got the rest of the organization, and again, be it a government agency or be it a private or public entity on the corporate side, outside of that, there's a whole team that has to work diligently, to protect the brand, to make sure they've got messaging out there. So, in your experience, again, what are the challenges for the rest of the organization in terms of crisis management?
Okay, that's a great question. So there's three things, a number of things that come to mind. First is there may or may not be a plan in place, and that's the first shortfall
right,
will get you into a lot of trouble, and that is not having a incident response plan and not having a type of crisis response plan. So first and foremost, you're asking for trouble if you're not planning and coordinating ahead of time. Second is the legal aspect of it. Many organizations neglect to include their lawyers in the incident response plan, and we have seen incidents where once the lawyers get involved, all real response activity stops because the lawyers are considering liabilities and they are, for the first time, looking at legal issues. So my advice to organizations is bring your lawyers into the planning process. They need to understand your business, their liabilities on the cyber side, and they need to understand some of the legal issues that they will be responsible for and can prepare for in advance. The third thing I would say is that there's often a lack of cooperation between business units within an organization. If you take a large organization, you may have your technical people doing things that the operational people don't know about or haven't accounted for. And that kind of lack of unified purpose, lack of unified command, if you will, can get an organization into trouble, especially when you have a complex situation and a lot of actors within your organization trying to respond in their own different way, but in an uncoordinated manner. It's a recipe for disaster. And the last thing that I think is worthy of highlighting is the communications piece. It's very important for companies to be as transparent as possible, especially public companies that are forced by law to disclose. You will find find that your message, if you are not crafting your message for the public, then the media will craft one for you and fill that information vacuum. And very quickly, the message can be can get out of control and become it may not be accurate, but it will be the narrative that the right. public accepts, and you will be responding. So, regulated or have some oversight from the government, you find that you will compound your problem because, in addition to responding to the real crisis, you will have requests from either, in some cases, from Congress or from regulatory agencies that will add additional burden to your response team. In addition to actually responding to the technical aspects, they will have to then assemble the information necessary to respond to, say, an insurance regulator, and that does tend to gum up the works in your response plan. And so I think these are things that you can account for in advance, you can plan for in advance, and you can practice in advance so that it goes as smooth as possible and that you have the best result that can come out of something like a crisis. There really is no perfect result. The best is to avoid the crisis, of course, but in the event of the crisis, a coordinated plan with the proper legal aspects accounted for and the communications aspects and everybody working together to achieve the same result, I think, is essential to success.
Sure, and you mentioned it briefly in your comments there with regards to practicing and validating plans and processes and team capabilities. And so the importance of obviously tabletop exercises or other stress tests of the organization are imperative. And so, you know, in your experience, again, you know, we often see, again, in our business, it always comes out in an exercise where there are issues around who owns the relationship with various stakeholders. Is it important, in your opinion, and why, that authorities or other partners should be involved in these types of training exercises to prepare for such events?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the saying is that you don't want to meet your team on game day.
Right.
You want to practice and train with your team, understand what your teammates can do, and probably, and perhaps in some cases more importantly, understand what your teammates won't be able to do. Because many of our subunits that I've seen in organizations have expectations that a resource or a capability will be provided by someone else. And when the actual crisis occurs, there's an enormous gap in covering what is necessary because multiple units expected someone else to do it or someone else to have it. And only through practice can you work out that kind of gap, identify it, and then assign that responsibility so that it's not missed during a real crisis.
Sure. Yeah, it makes total sense. I just want to touch on before I know we're going to wrap up here probably in the next 5 minutes. I just want to touch on, you know, smaller businesses and other, you know, critical vendors. We often hear, and I know there's been a few larger cases more recently, I think Target being one of them here in the States, where a smaller vendor of theirs was identified as the way into the organization for the hackers. So, you know, on the small business side or any organization that's supporting a larger business, you know, why is it imperative for those small businesses to be as prepared, if not more prepared, as the larger organizations?
Well, because there's significant liabilities for causing harm to a partner. If you're a small company, your own resources and your own data may not be very valuable or very much a target, but if you are connected to a larger partner, you may be liable for all the losses that are the result of your negligence in protecting yourself. So it's not just your
right.
own assets that are at risk. You are also responsible in many ways for protecting those you are doing business with. And they're certainly not going to be bashful about bringing a suit, lawsuit against someone they believe caused damage to them.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of cyber insurance policies flying around right now, certainly for any size of organization. So, you know, that ties right into your comment there. So the final thing I have, Leo, for you, really, I know you'll be joining us as the keynote speaker at the International Crisis Management Conference in Boston on March 31st, and we're looking forward to your presentation there. But for the audience, I know some of the audience that will be listening to this before the conference will certainly be intrigued to listen to your presentation and get to meet you and interact with you during the conference. What can they expect from your presentation in terms of you know, what you're going to show them, what you're going to say to them, and those kind of learning objectives that they can take away from the presentation?
Right, I think what I intend to convey are some best practices for measuring your incident response capability. So there are important metrics. Many of us in the field understand the basics of incident response, but what we don't have is a good cycle of how to improve our performance. And there are some things we can look at and measure that over time we can work to improve. And that's what I'd like to convey. I'd like to talk about the things we can measure and that bring us closer to a favorable resolution of a crisis over and maturing our security process. I'd also like to talk about the communications challenges that companies have and compare a few cases where communications was done effectively and communications was not done effectively, and the different results that came out of it, and try to talk about how to take control of your message, how to be transparent in a way that doesn't increase your liability risk and actually brings in additional resources to help you because you have a favorable public image and a favorable communication strategy. So those are the two things I really want to focus on: proper incident response metrics, proper maturing of the incident response preparation cycle, and also the importance of the communications piece in your incident response planning.
Well, I think that's going to be great. It's certainly timely, and I know the audience on the podcast here, our listeners, as well as those that will be attending the conference, are certainly going to be looking forward to your presentation. And so just any final comments that you have for our listeners, as well as, you know, any information on how they can get a hold of you if they want to reach out.
Right. So I'm very happy to be part of the conference. I think it's important for crisis management professionals to continue to learn and exchange best practices. That no one has all the answers, and we need to share amongst each other what's working and what's not working, and look forward together at the horizon of what threats are coming at us and how we can best prepare. So I'm really thrilled to be part of the conference. As for reaching me, I am at the Crypzone website. It's CRYPTZONE. Crypzone is the name of the company, and you can find me there. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to take any particular questions from the audience during the conference or any time after, and look forward to meeting and exchanging information with the participants.
Well, that's perfect way to end the interview. And again, Leo, safe travels, and thanks for your time today, and we'll see you in Boston at the end of March.
Super. Thank you, Rob. I look forward to it. Thank you very much for this.
Yep. Take care.
Great. Now, bye.
That's it for episode 10 of the PreparedX podcast. I do hope you enjoyed this episode. I think it was a real interesting one for Cyber Month. So please do share this one with anyone you think may be interested. Share it amongst your networks. Also, if you want to hear Leo speak live, you can join us at the Crisis Management Conference in Boston. I mentioned it once or twice during this podcast. I'm giving it another plug here. It's on March 31st in Boston, and Leo is our keynote speaker. If you go to crisisconferences.com, you'll find all the information there with regards to Leo and with regards to the conference. We hope to see you there. Until next time, have a safe and enjoyable day wherever you are. Take care.